As we're gearing up for the start of the school year, many districts in Wisconsin are rolling out new teacher compensation models in compliance with Act 10.
These models are performance-based and take student outcomes into consideration. Some teachers are worried that the new models are too subjective and too heavy-handed.
Here to talk with us about how the new compensation models will change the education landscape is Steve Correa. He's the chair of education and a professor of education at St. Catherine University. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, very glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start by talking about how teacher pay has worked historically. What have previous pay models been like for teachers?
Yeah, and I think that's a natural place to start. You know, just teacher pay in and of itself is usually at a minimum half of a district's budget, and sometimes, you know, 75% to 80%. So the topic is very important to administrators, superintendents, of course, and the person that's taking home the paycheck. But when we look historically, unfortunately, some people look at teacher compensation and automatically assume today's model was invented yesterday. And so they blame it on whether it's unions or whatever the case, and they sort of forget there's a nice long history here. Anybody listening that watched the Little House on the Prairie series might remember, and I think her name was Miss Beadle, but I wasn't a huge watcher.
I think so.
Okay.
It's been a while.
Sometimes, you know, those teachers, they were paid in food. Sometimes they had to skin the animal themselves, and boarding. And that was the sum total of their compensation. Maybe a little extra pay. I don't know if they went to Olson's Mercantile or not. But but the analogy is, or the example is pretty darn correct. It was meager, get-by subsistence. And it just simply reflected we had to have somebody watch these children teach basic skills, and we're done. As the evolution of education came about and the teaching profession, we developed probably more about to the 1920s, 1930s, and some of the more rural areas, models that paid high school teachers more or much more, elementary school teachers less. But the idea was maybe the high school teachers had more education. Maybe they actually had a four-year degree or a normal school degree. And, geez, I have to admit, when I was in second grade, I had a teacher that did not have a teaching degree, Mrs. Klessa. I happen to think she walked on water, and I learned to read well with her. But clearly, she must have made less than the other teachers. And I'm not ancient, and I wasn't born before Sputnik. So it's not that old. But that model existed because, again, the education system was maturing, and we were reflecting some of the changes in higher education and our expectations for learning and knowledge on the part of teachers and skills. Now we're in what some researchers have called a single salary schedule. And that's probably a better title than descriptor, but the idea is basically everybody comes in at X salary, and then you gradually move through what we used to think of as a salary schedule. Oh, you have 2 years experience and a master's degree, and you go down the matrix this way and that way. So it reflects somewhat the more nuanced expectations of increased professionalism in the field, degrees, ongoing professional development. And now we are in, because of Act 10 in Wisconsin, this post-single salary schedule because school boards no longer have to do that. And that's how we then come upon this topic today. They're trying to say, how do we do this? How do we fairly reward our teachers? And how do we get the best bang for our buck with what is at least two-thirds of the school budget? The question is right on the nose. The outcomes are usually not very well informed.
Well, how did these salary schedules compare district to district in recent past?
And some districts just have very nice compensation schedules. Now, just for audience members, you know, listeners out there, teachers in Nassau County, New York, probably don't have a lot of listeners from there, but did you know that they can make almost $100,000 a year? Public school teachers. I'm positive they work hard. They reflect high levels of training expectations. They have to have advanced skill sets. But in some states, public school starting teachers start in the mid-$20,000. Now, how's that for a range with what we expect people to do within schools? That's quite a bit. In Wisconsin, some of the more affluent school districts that have been able to support with levies, other types of support, for example, Kohler has done very well. They're an exempted school district. They have accepted these higher taxes to be able to have an independent school district. Shoreview, some of the other exceptional districts, Appleton is a very strong district, some of the more Tony suburbs of Milwaukee, Sun Prairie, they have very strong salary schedules. They get very strong teachers. But some of the rural districts, they are financially strapped. So they have a hard time attracting, especially those underserved areas, say special ed licenses, math, science. Physics teachers come in about as often as Venus on the half shell. So they are very difficult to find.
Well, and with Act 10 coming into effect, it sounds like wages can only be negotiated to the rate of inflation, that raises can be negotiated to the rate of inflation. Does that even things out at all?
And of course, the key word in that is negotiated. Can you imagine not even getting the rate of inflation? And that happens because that's a perfectly legal thing for districts to do. So what has happened is districts now are looking at things like signing bonuses for whether teachers with strong track records, strong leadership records, perhaps multiple licenses. If you can get a math, physics, Spanish teacher, that's a valuable person. So students going through teacher education programs need to know that the days of coming out, I'm going to teach elementary education, and I'm going to be with social studies. Well, you know, you're not in a position to negotiate very much. So some districts are much more strongly positioned to take advantage of market forces, and other districts are going to be woefully left behind because they just can't compete.
And talk a little bit about how teacher reviews happen and how the, as I understand it, it will be based mostly on student performance. Is that correct?
And that is exactly right. The current model reflects the values and the culture of schools, or I should say the pre-Act 10 model. And what that did, you know, teachers saw that no one teacher educated that child. The building, the professionals did, and they didn't try to tease out, well, my effect was 43% of his score. They all realized it was a social enterprise to educate that child. Well, some districts now are looking at very narrow but specific quantifiable outcomes of student assessments to be able to tie it to either incentive pay or, quite frankly, to teacher pay. You know, the whole ball of wax. And, these are the ones I wish that if anybody is listening, they could direct these people to an outstanding resource in the state of Wisconsin, and we're talking gold standard, is the Consortium for Policy Research and Education. And it's right there on the Madison campus. These people do work that is phenomenal. And they're rarely referred to by districts looking at what are viable models. And they talk about models that exist around the country and what we want to do. Colorado has a system that's a very well thought out post single salary system. And it has areas where it doesn't include student achievement and increases in it, but it also recognizes professional development skills in teachers. They are evaluated by principals. And then how that teacher contributes to the overall mission of the school. So there are ways and models out there that exist. But if a district is looking at narrow measures, which anybody in industry would probably say they gave that up in the 1970s, narrows measures. They're looking at broad measures, employee input, participation, ownership. It builds morale. So, you know, districts, people proposing these narrow performance measures really need to inform themselves that, A, it's an old model, and, B, there are good places to go for information right in the state of Wisconsin.
We're talking to education expert Steve Correa about new teacher compensation models in the state.
And we want to hear from you on this. Do you think it makes sense to pay teachers based on performance? Teachers, are you experiencing a change in the way that you're going to be paid? What is it based on? Call in and tell us about it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation with education expert Steve Correa about new post-Act 10 teacher compensation models, which are getting off the ground here in Wisconsin.
And we're taking your calls. What do you think of a more performance-based compensation model for teachers? Is it a good idea or not, and why? Teachers, we want to hear from you, too. Are you in a district where the way that you're paid is changing? Have you moved into another district because of hiring incentives there? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Steve, before the break, we were talking about ways in which to measure a teacher's performance, and you were saying that these are narrow measurements, but I want to talk about, based on student performance, that is, I want to talk about whether or not student performance is based then, therefore, directly on standardized testing scores and that sort of thing. How intertwined are standardized tests with teacher performance?
And usually, most of the models that other states are looking at, they almost all, geez, I can't think of one that doesn't, they all include aspects of student performance on standardized tests. They're consistent measures to be able to use. So, you know, administrators like them because it's a nice black and white number, and you can kind of stare at it and say, "Oh, look where you fall." The limitations of those are that it might not reflect the growth from last year to this year or what has happened in the intervening time. That does not dismiss that number. That number must be looked at in a context. And teachers are saying just a number, that's not the picture. There are a variety of inputs that we need to look here, let alone test anxiety on the student's part, but okay, that might be. But the idea is that you want to look at multiple measures of teaching effectiveness, just as we do for all employees. And we want to be able to do that. So teachers are just saying, there's lots going on here. Let's look at as many of these as we can. And that's what professionals do. They discuss back and forth what the measures are, what the inputs, how much do we attention do we give to this. Let's look at other responsibilities, duties, you know, those kind of things. And so it's a menu and a range of expectations. So standardized test scores are a portion, but they are a portion. They're not the entirety of what you're hoping to measure.
Who exactly is measuring teacher performance?
Oftentimes, these people should really be nominated for sainthood most of the time, building principals have so much coming at them, and a large part of the new race to the top, if indeed that's really what ends up sticking around. But the idea is that building principals are responsible for their teachers, and they're responsible for measuring their teachers. So most building principals have not had the training and the expertise in these multivariate analysis, anybody taking a statistics course just rolled their eyes, with this idea of, wow, multiple inputs, different effect levels from these inputs, how much of this? Principals are going from one room to the next, and they've got a parent call, and they've got this, and they've got books, and they have a lot coming at them. So everybody is looking for something efficient and quick, and teachers are saying that's not right, it's not proper, and it doesn't reflect what we do. So we need to come up with a model that works and that appropriately recognizes and rewards strong, effective teacher behavior. So that's what they're trying to do.
Let's take a call from Camille in New Berlin. Hi, Camille.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a retired teacher, and I can tell you, as a proctoring the tests for eighth grade and high school, that many of these kids know that these tests have no effect on their grade. They're passing from one level to another, and they just whip through them as quickly as possible. Why not do the same thing for a dentist? Pediatrics. If your kid gets cavities, your children, your patients get cavities, you don't get paid as well. Obesity, if you're a pediatrician, you should take a pay cut. Because that's basically what you're doing to teachers.
Thanks, Camille. Steve Correa, what's your response to
that? Yeah, I like Camille. You know, it might be helpful to know that Medicare is clearly moving very much away from inputs with patients, and they're now looking at outcomes. In fact, some people listening may know, hospitals 99.9% of the time do not get compensated for readmissions for the same medical condition because they have to do it right the first time. So, what she's saying is we need to figure out ways to be able to incentivize students to do well on these tests, and we need to find authentic measures of student learning that do matter, that do resonate, that do reflect expertise of teachers and the culture of the school. By the way, no easy matter. You can see why principals, strong principals, are so phenomenal. But, you know, other places are looking at this, and they are tying compensation to outcomes that are specific and are not repetitious. So we do need to, so hospitals have the incentive to get it right the first time. And what we're trying to do here with teachers is we're trying to find ways to be able to respect and reflect that input of their professionalism within teaching and then have students understand the role of all of this. So, yeah, you can see it's a complex dynamics. I have no doubt that what she observed isn't a consistent behavior across many eighth grade classrooms.
You said earlier that older models of teaching, of teacher pay, honored the fact that teaching is a social enterprise. Do you think these new models will change the culture of teaching?
Well, you know, it puts it at risk, and that is clear. It puts it at risk. Teachers are very open to, I want to bring in the reading specialist. I want to bring in the special needs person. Well, the student isn't designated with a special need area. However, I know that they have expertise that can help. And the special needs people, the speech pathologists, they come in, they help. Well, we're now changing the values from the emphasis on this child and this idea of a more equitable, even distribution of compensation to strong market forces reflecting individual behavior. Teachers don't think that way initially. And, of course, you know, there in Madison, R1 institutions, high professors there of research institutions, they are rewarded for publication, bringing in grants, and working with grad students. Colleges, wonderful colleges in the state, St. Norbert College, Beloit College, Lawrence University, they have a very different pay scale. They do not overtly pay, you know, economics professors more. They probably do pay them more because they're hard to get. Because colleges have a different culture. We're all educating these bachelor degree undergraduate students together. So it's a different culture, it's a different incentive system, and therefore it's a different reward structure. Schools, you're putting that at risk when you are doing this. So that's one of those caveats of unintended consequences. School boards and superintendents need to do this thoughtfully. It can be done. The Colorado model that I mentioned is mentioned. There's evidence to show that it's pretty effective. But they really need to inform what they're doing and not deduce that the current model is union-derived, therefore it rewards lack of motivation on people and it's evil. So anyway, it does put it at risk, and so it has to be entered into carefully.
In our last minute here, how do you see this playing out across the country? Is Wisconsin setting the standard?
Well, I don't want to say that there's a race in the wrong direction, but Wisconsin, of course, is the first one to blow up the existing model and to take away that idea of the compensation model. Perhaps something really strong will come out of it, and that would be impressive. But if it's a model to save money for districts, no. If it's a model to engage teachers in inputs to look at ways to build a reward structure for good, effective teaching, there's a possibility.
Steve, thank you so much for being with us today.
Very glad to be here. Thank you for asking.
That was Steve Correa. He's chair of education and a professor of education at St. Catherine University.